everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. We are off and running on Thursday. It is the 18th of April already, 2024. Tom Fairbanks, my buddy, engineering and producing. Tom, I was mentioning to you before the show, some of those pictures out of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, they had 5 inches of rain in 24 hours, which is their total yearly amount. They've never had that much rain since records began and keeping them in 1949. It was just unbelievable. I saw some of these pictures at 2:45 in the afternoon. It was absolutely pitch black.
And I saw some of those pictures as well, and at least one, it looked like an ambulance was in water deep enough for it to be floating a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And some of the rescues of the animals, being a huge animal lover, I like to see that. Anyway, we're in our 14th year with our radio program. We are coming to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village studio in the campus of Bustos Media, which really has this growing presence here in Tucson. We've got 5 radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Pretty much every show we have done since 2011 is archived there and easy to access. When we do our telephone interviews, we'll be doing that at about 12:30. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. But right now we welcome the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Adelita Grijalva. Adelita, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. How are you? Nice to see you. Thanks for
having
me.
Good to see you. Thank you for asking. And speaking of asking about how someone's doing, we want to talk about your dad. How is the congressman doing?
He is responding very well to treatment. Thank you for asking. And we have, as a family, have been overwhelmed by the well wishes and prayers and thoughts and cards. And so we really appreciate that. And on behalf of my family and my father, we just want to say thank you to everyone for reaching out. We really appreciate it.
Cancer is horrible.
Horrible.
Need to, we won't say what commonly, I don't, well, I'm just say, let's say cancer is something that I wish we could just get that word out of the, out of our language.
I do too. It's something that every person that I've talked to has been touched by cancer.
Yep.
And I think it's cathartic for people to sort of share their stories and what's been going on with them. But we've really appreciated like the overwhelming support from people. So
that is very important. All right, is this federal funding that's come in to avert the so-called street releases in Pima County and Cochise County and Santa Cruz counties, is that kind of in the rear view mirror for now?
It is. We received $21.7 million. So we're hoping that that's going to get us through the end of this calendar year and ensure that we don't have street releases. I know, you know, we've been talking about street releases for so long and they haven't happened. And I think it really is because of, you know, this amazing job that Pima County with the city of Tucson, the state, and especially Casalitas has done to just keep our community safe and help people get to their final destinations, which isn't Arizona. So, you know, we are responding to a federal problem and the county has stepped up and I'm glad that we're going to be able to continue to do that because otherwise the responsibility would have fallen to our Santa Cruz and Cochise County neighbors who don't have the infrastructure, really small communities like Lukeville and Douglas. And, you know, we would have people released right at the Greyhound on I-10 and Broadway. And that would be everyone's problem.
So they would have, in effect, just opened the door, the Border Patrol, and said, bye.
Exactly. Yes.
You're at the bus stop. And
yeah. And also passed many counties on the way to leave them here in Pima County, which has always been interesting to me. But I'm really glad, and I know that at least the majority of my colleagues were happy and relieved to hear that we received funding, and we sent out letters, myself, the mayor, the bishop. We all signed letters to all of our representatives on both sides of the aisle, in Congress and senators, and we're just thankful that we were heard.
You know, and people who don't really follow the news, there is still this kind of misconception, not kinda, it is a misconception, that all of these people that come every day are suddenly new residents of Pima County.
No, they are legal asylum seekers, and they have sponsors throughout the country, and 99% do not stay in Arizona. We're just helping them coordinate flights and get, or any other transportation, to get to their final destination.
The 1864 law on abortion was affirmed by our state Supreme Court. The ruling was 4-2, and you and your colleagues wanted to weigh in on this.
We did. Supervisor Hines brought forward a resolution opposing the near total abortion ban before Arizona was a state.
Yeah, it's
a territorial law
that was passed when the capital wasn't Phoenix. This was up in territorial capital Prescott, I believe.
Women couldn't vote. We didn't have any rights. You know, I've been saying they want to take us back to where my daughter doesn't have the same rights as my mom. This one takes us back to my daughter doesn't have the same rights as her great-grandmother. It's so barbaric. And what we need to understand is that this isn't going to stop abortions. It's just going to make them unsafe. One of the judges that voted for this is up for re-election. And I think we all need to make really strong decisions and make a statement about what we value as a community.
And this was a 4-1 vote. Supervisor Christie was the lone dissenting vote on that. So that was a 4-1 vote. And we'll see what the legislature does. They tried to get some action on this earlier in the week, but there were enough Republican lawmakers in the House who said that they were not ready to appeal it. And when we had Senator Bennett on our Friday Focus interview, Kurt Prendergast from the Tucson Agenda and I asked him, what percentage do you think of your fellow Republicans want to stay with the 1864 law? And he said about 1/3. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's been interesting that I think so many people that are Republicans consider themselves more conservative have been walking away and stepping away from this decision. I think that it... you know, I hope the legislature does something. But in the meantime, we do have Governor Hobbs who will stay in executive order, which means that it isn't a risk right at this time, but it will be.
Yeah, I think it's been pushed back. June, I think, was the last timeline I saw. But we'll see how all of that evolves. I want to talk about the Pima County Treasurer's Office. Beth Ford submitted a letter of resignation to you and the board. Beth had been on board as treasurer, I think, for about a quarter of a century, like 25 years or something. Beth and I actually went to the same high school in suburban Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Small world.
Not the same. We didn't graduate in the same year, but we know a lot of the same people. On the North Shore of Chicago, and Beth's a good person, and she just decided she was going to, you know, she'd had enough, and she recommended that her deputy, former state lawmaker, Chris Ackerley, be appointed by you and your colleagues for the job. So the vote was 3-2. Tell us about it.
So the vote was 3-2. Myself and Supervisor Hines voted no. We had different reasons. I agreed with his reason as well. But, you know, I think that we had a qualified individual who served as deputy for, I believe it was 16 years. Mr. Ackerley's been in the position for 2 years. I thought that, you know, as a placeholder until the end of the year, it made sense to me. The office was going to continue to run as it has been. And, you know, all of the same staff members would be there. So I didn't think that there was going to be a big issue there. And I also have an issue inherently with sort of anointing or proclaiming, you know, this is going to be our next treasurer when there's a contested campaign.
Yeah, because we all know incumbents just have an inherent advantage on the ballot. So this does give now Chris that advantage.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons I voted no, and the item passed 3-2. So, you know, Mr. Ackerley was there and shook his hand and said, you know, I wish you luck.
Mm-hmm.
And good luck
in the
job.
Yeah, and for the record, you said you agreed with Supervisor Hines' reason, which I believe was he just felt he would like to see a woman in that position.
Yes, and woman has been in that position, and if given the option with two qualified candidates, he'd like to give the position to a woman, which I appreciate that opinion, because we're not in as many spaces as we should be as women.
All right, let's pause right here. Adelita Grijalva is here, chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Adelita, I want to talk a little bit about our great sponsor, Mona's Danish Bakery. We all need a little comfort food right about now, don't
Always.
We?
Always. Great.
You know, you and I are on board with that one for sure. Mona's the home of the Danish Kringle, and they are located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. For the past couple of months, they've had that added enhancement. Steve and the team applied for and were granted from Pima County a liquor license. They wanted to enhance the dining experience there, so they wanted the mimosas to be available for breakfast, which they are. They do a great lunch, and some people might want a beer with their lunch that is also available. So that's a little added enhancement for you to go up to Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. We'll take our first full break, then lots more to discuss with Adelita Grijalva right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is our Thursday edition. That means tomorrow's Friday, and our Friday focus interview will be the police chief, Chad Kazmar, who always gives a very good interview. Guy's really, it's very transparent. Ask him something, he's going to give you a straight shooter answer.
Very knowledgeable.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't use shooter with the police right. chief. But anyway, yeah, Tim Steller is going to join me, and we always have a good time when Tim is with me in the questioning. Tim Steller of the Daily Star, not only a great writer, but a good friend of mine. Adelita Grijalva is here, the chairwoman of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, who represents the 5th District on the Supervisorial Board. There are 5 members. Okay, there's some confusion about this vocational school that the board said the funding, that's it for the Pima vocational funding. And I've heard some people say, well, look at Pima County now, turning their backs on vocational education.
Yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to clear that up. So I'm obviously incredibly supportive of alternative programs, of programs that are going to help students graduate from high school, get an opportunity to find a career. And when Pima Vocational started, it was really the first of its kind. No other county has ever had a charter. No other county had a charter. And we didn't have programs like JTED. We didn't have those vocational programs. There's always been a pendulum shift in education, and at that time it was 4-year college degree or nothing. And so a lot of these vocational programs lost funding. So Pima Vocational was filling that gap. And I shared a basement with Pima Vocational for about 12 years. And so
really?
I'm very familiar with their program, understood it. I understood who they were targeting. And over time, because of programs like JTED and because high schools were really pushing a lot more vocational options, the niche group that Pima Vocational was targeting got smaller and smaller. And so their average enrollment right now, because they're through the end of this, through the end of May, so the beginning of June will be the last day. June 1 is their last day. They have on average 24 students. And Pima County was supplementing their budget consistently from the year after they were created. Mm-hmm. Part of the charter with Pima County was that they were going to be able to be self-sustaining. That actually never happened. And it's one thing to do small supplemental additions, but when we received the budget, Pima County was supplementing over $600,000 to Pima Vocational. And on average spending $22,000 additional dollars after the state funded for their education. And so it's not that I am not opposed to that. It's just we're looking at a tight budget year, and we had to make decisions as to did these students have options outside of Pima Vocational to be able to gain employment? And they do. They have a lot of really amazing options. And the other is that one of the big pieces of Pima Vocational was that they would have an internship in a career choice, a possible career path. And less than a third of those students had any internship options. So that was part of the pieces that were missing for me. And so unfortunately, it really reminded me, it kind of took me back to the horrible days of school closure hearings for Tucson Unified. That's exactly what it felt like. Had students crying, teachers crying. It's really difficult. And the one thing that will bring community out is threatening their child's education. And so mm-hmm. I understood it. I hope I was articulate enough in saying Pima County is supportive of vocational education, but we should be working with our school systems, JTED, in order to make sure that these students have those options. But there are also vocational options in Pima County for older students. And so I think that all we do have, we continue to have options in Pima County, just not through Pima Vocational.
So the budget, you said it's going to be a tight budget year. There'll be, is there a special meeting to look at the budget coming up?
Yeah, Supervisor Lee asked for a study session on our mm-hmm. budget, which I think is a great idea. So what we've sort of figured out with everyone's schedule, it will be at the end of our May 7th meeting. We're just going to tack on an additional 2 to 2.5 hours to talk about the budget. Administrator Lesher laid out that we're at about $4.5 million in the red. And so some of the proposals that came forward was every budget, every department taking a 3% cut and elected offices taking a 1% cut. I think that that should be equitable across the board. And so maybe everybody take a little bit, like a 2% cut, and then we'd be able to absorb that. There was some conversation about increasing the tax rate. And at this time, considering that we can do some minor changes and not impact the tax rate, I'm likely to support keeping that tax rate flat.
General Maxwell, Ted was on the show this week. He's now the chair of the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board as they try to hammer out maybe getting an RTA Next program where everybody can agree. I realize you are not the representative from Pima County on that board. That's our supervisor, District 1, Rex Scott. But do you have some thoughts about how the things are progressing?
I'm hoping, you know, I do have meetings with the mayor and every 2 times a month. Mm-hmm. And so we do talk about it. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that everyone could stay at the table, continue to work together towards a regional plan. I do think there should look equitably at...
General Maxwell said he felt they're moving in that direction for the city to get what they would be considered their fair share.
Yeah. And I'm really appreciative of that. I heard some mm-hmm. of the meeting.
Yeah.
I do think that they're moving closer in that direction. And my hope is that everyone stays at the table because it will really benefit us regionally.
How about the jail?
Yeah. Well, I did make a comment. I think, there has not been a movement. There has not been any vocal support of a new jail. Or a new tax
no,
or a new jail.
There's no groundswell among there's, Pima County voters. We want a new jail, right?
No, the groundswell is, can we do anything?
Can we fix it?
Can we fix it? Can we reduce the number of people in the jail? There's so many people that are over 80% are there for pending, violations or pending charges. So I do think that there is an opportunity for us to do things differently. Since the beginning of the transition center that started this year, we're seeing more and more people access services and hopefully change the tide of that revolving door of someone being released from the jail and coming back shortly thereafter. I think the city's working really hard to provide services to our unhoused populations, and Pima County is now working towards creating more affordable housing options, which is something that the county hasn't done in a very long time. So I'm proud of the work there. And it has to be a regional solution.
This is good news that 90% of the people who went through the transition program, the Pima County Transition Center program, which began in August, you and your colleagues got an update recently. And so 9 out of 10 of the people who went through the program stayed out of jail for at least 30 days.
Those are significant numbers. They really are, because some of the stories that they told, two of them specifically, one person had been in some sort of either juvenile detention facility or, our county jail since the age of 15. He was now in his 40s. Mm-hmm. And now he has gainful employment, has the support systems needed. And I think that,
his whole life basically was in
incarcerated.
Behind bars.
Yeah. And I think that we have to remember that these are people that are here for relatively nonviolent offenses. And they are going to be coming out into our community at some point. So wouldn't we rather have people in our community that are invested in making it better? They can be there for their families. It's better for the children that of people who are detainees in our jail. And so I think that these are all really positive steps, and I'm hoping to continue to do that. We're waiting on one other position to be filled from the city, because this is a partnership with the city of Tucson. And once that position is filled, then our transition center can be a more 24/7 operation, which would be really helpful because people are released from the county jail 24/7.
And I like the fact that these county workers, I think they're referred to as justice navigators, they really try to connect the folks with existing services such as treatment, housing, and employment. Then they also keep track, help the people keep track of their court dates.
Mm-hmm. It's really helpful. And I think many, I believe all of the justice navigators have had some involvement with law enforcement and with being detained or some sort of process thereof. So many of them have shared, you know, I understand because I was in this situation. And I think that makes a huge difference as to being able to trust somebody, understanding that they're not judging you because they've been in your position and, you know, they came out on the other end. And it is very inspiring. And I think it makes a huge difference.
And you were talking about your own personal experience and working with the courts, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, with Pima County Teen Court.
Teen Court. Yeah.
26 years. And it does make a difference when you have young... In that case specifically, it's young people. Mm-hmm. And I think that had we had more programs like that, more prevention programs, many of the people that are currently detained in our jails and prisons wouldn't necessarily be in that situation if they had the supports they needed earlier.
All right. Pima County Chairwoman Adelita Grijalva, thank you, Adelita. Good to see you, and the best again to your father.
Thank you so much. Appreciate being here.
All right. Well, we're at the midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Our border report with Keith Rosenblum is coming up. The Mexican presidential election is just right around the corner, and they have opened their campaign season. Unlike in America, where our campaign season goes on for years, theirs is really only a few weeks. We'll be right back with that.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We love Green Things, 3384 East River Road. They have just about everything you could imagine for your garden. Perfect time of year to do your spring planning, planting, and maybe your planning as well for that beautiful garden. Zocalo Village is their sister business, and they have just an incredible selection of pottery. So you buy the plants and then get some beautiful pottery to stick the plants in. So pretty easy process, 13-acre site. Check it out, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They are open daily in their 53rd year of business. Jan and Jack, the owners, very hands-on, and the employees there are so knowledgeable. They will not only point you in the right direction, they will walk you to the particular plants that will do well in your garden. When we do our live line, our telephone interviews, that is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our monthly border report, hosted by longtime border observer Keith Rosenblum, whose resume includes border reporting for both the Arizona Daily Star and the Arizona Republic. He's also a former congressional aide to the late U.S. Representative Jim Colby. Jim represented Southern Arizona for 22 years. Keith, how are you?
Bill, Keith is doing very well, and it's not really the monthly border report because you jeeved me this month and made me the every 6 week border reporter, Keith Rosenblum.
Yeah, that was due to there was a scheduling problem because normally
I had an interview that day at Hermosillo, and that's why.
Yeah, normally you are on the first Monday of every month, and you'll be back with us in a couple of weeks, first Monday in May. But how did that interview go, by the way?
Well, I was sitting down with Manuel Fabio Beltrones, who is a candidate for senator right now from Sonora, and I intend to be writing a book, or at least an e-book. I'll call it an essay because it's not that long. But my purpose was to sit with him for some time and learn about the campaign. My view, the Keith view is, and by the way, let me just set the context here. Mexico has presidential elections on June 2nd. It also will choose 300 popularly elected deputies and 200 more that are called proportional representation. So they serve in the Congress, but they're not as a geographical deputy, but rather as a party or as an ideology kind of thing. So depending on the national vote, those other 200 deputies or congressmen go in as because they're from a significant part of the population. The U.S. is just winner wins, you know, winner gets all. Mm-hmm. And you have a geographical seat. In Mexico, there are 300 geographical seats and then 200 that are apportioned by parties. So on June 2nd, they'll effectively elect 500 new deputies or, you know, congressmen, the president. I think it's 9 governorships throughout the country. And again, with the Senate, they have there's 32 states, so they normally have 64 members because there's 2 senators from each state. But again, for proportional reasons, they've actually doubled it, so there's 128 senators. So Beltrones, who was a former governor of Sonora, former senator, former deputy, former House deputy, I mean, he's been in politics now for 50 years.
Wow.
And so, and it's my view, it's the Keith view, which is probably lots of people will dissent from it, that Mexico needs a Beltrones more than ever right now because Keith sees Mexico on a very steep decline when it comes to fundamental issues of public safety. And so that was the reason for the interview, was to cover a bunch of ground for the book that I'll be doing.
Let's set the stage here. There are 2 presidential candidates that are the main candidates. Who are they, and which one, in Keith's opinion, might be better for the borderland region.
Okay, the Keith perspective. You have two women who are, there's the third possibility is a guy named Javier Alvarez Maynez. He's like a more of a lark. He doesn't really have any base at all. The woman that was really designated by President Lopez Obrador, who serves until the end of September, is Claudia Sheinbaum, and she's a PhD in physics, I think. Graduated from the National University of Mexico. Jewish, former governor of the Ciudad de México. That's the federal district, what used to be the federal district, but is now actually its own state. And she may be the least articulate woman ever to walk the earth.
Wow.
I'd love to see a Jewish, believe me, I'd love to see a Jewish woman be the governor, the president of a country.
Yeah.
But she cannot, she everything she says sounds insincere to me. I just want to run the other way. She's a horrible speaker.
Oh, boy.
She just seems vapid to me. More so than, I won't use any comparisons, though. All right, so the competition is a woman named So Claudia Sheinbaum would be coming from the Morena Party, which is the party that Lopez Obrador has been, he founded and has been representing for the last 6 years in the presidency. The next candidate is a coalition of parties. So it's PAN, the PRI, the Partido Verde, a bunch of these others. And her name is Xochitl. That's X-O-C-H-I-T-L, Galvez. And she comes from very humble roots, and she is a businesswoman, also a senator from the PAN party. And fascinating because she's done a whole bunch of work in artificial intelligence and artificial, it has to do with also, you have two brilliant women, basically, who are running for the presidency. And both are 61 years old. And to me right now, I mean, all the polls, which to the extent that they matter, show that Sheinbaum is a shoe-in, like 15 or 20 points ahead. I don't buy it for a sec. I think right now it could go either way.
Mm.
And that polls are notoriously horrible in Mexico, and this will be just another example of it. And people they don't tell pollsters who they're going to vote for anyway. So it's possible then that the third candidate, Alvarez Maynez, could end up influencing. Maybe he'll get 3 or 4% of the vote. I doubt it. I don't even think he'll be a factor there. He could be, but anyway, my hunch is it's going to be so much of a tie that everybody's going to be complaining, because that's how close it'll be. And I'm not sure they'll have a decision when the election is on June 2nd. Normally they wait just 24 hours or 48 hours and have numbers. It won't surprise me that it's a lot. It's even longer than that. Anyway, so the point that I'm making here isn't so much that, I mean, either one of these women would be great for the country, I think, or to the extent that anyone can be. But the real issue behind about Beltran is in writing this essay on it, this long essay. And by the way, to do the essay, I called a bunch of people, called in a bunch of, we'll call them academic or nerd favors from people who are experts on Mexico. I've met with Wayne Cornelius, who founded the UCSD Center for Mexican Studies. I talked to Duncan Wood, who's an authority at the Wilson Center in Washington. Spoke with Rod Camp, who's considered like the daddy, the granddaddy of all Mexicanologists.
Mm.
So I did some homework ahead of time before I started writing. And my take is that the country needs a Beltronis, not necessarily this one, but I don't know of any others that are there, who knows all the, who's been in the mud and has had to fight through the years and understands that if Mexico doesn't do something, that the permeation of the criminal organized crime into the economy and into government is so serious that it actually will have, it will affect us here, and it will affect Mexico's relationship vis-a-vis the whole world. So if they don't figure out some way to put the brakes on that penetration of organized crime into every aspect of daily life, it's going to have serious ramifications for the country itself and for everybody. And it won't affect the tourism industry. You can still go to Cancun, still go to Vallarta. So these are places where it's almost like, they're almost like meccas. They're almost like islands where no one is affected by anything, but everyone else is.
Okay, so Galvez and Sheinbaum, the one you said is just totally inarticulate, which might have a better feel for the borderlands region, Keith Rosenblum?
Let me also offend Galvez at the same time. I only offended. I only trash talk Sheinbaum.
Okay.
Galvez herself is one of those, I don't know how to describe it. There's a certain kind of Mexican woman. Now I get in all sorts of trouble.
Yeah.
But there's a certain kind of Mexican woman who, in a society of machismo,
yes,
is going to go overboard to show that she's just every bit as much a macho as the men. Mm. And so they use all the same cuss words, all the same braggadocio, all the, and that's her.
Oh.
So it's kind of gross to me. The two candidates, I can't say that personally I like either one, yeah. But the one who would have the most influence on the border area would be neither. They'll both be fine. In other words, so much of what's happening in the border area anyway is codified. It's in our agreements with Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that one would necessarily make a difference. They both are very much central Mexico creatures.
Mm.
Sheinbaum being Mexico City, although she studied at Berkeley too. But she's been to the, she's spent plenty of time and speaks English. And I think, and so does Galvez. She just was in Washington meeting people. They've done the like obligatory U.S. tours and gone and met people and said, here's who I am. So I think they would both be okay statesmen or stateswomen, but I don't think that when it comes to border policy, it's more of a national issue that, I mean, I can't think of, we have our big issues along the border are smuggling groups and organized crime, tourism, or, you know, biggest issues are maybe how long it takes Keith and others to come back into the U.S. after a trip and the way that we're, you know, the way, but right now, Bill, and, you know, you know this because you're very much in the travel world right now, you can't add another flight to Cancun Airport. There's no, it's saturated. Tulum Airport is booming already. It just opened.
Mm-hmm.
Vallarta is doing great. Acapulco is kind of on the violent side, but it's still doing well.
Yeah.
So they're different worlds that exist simultaneously.
All right. We're up against the break, but I'm going to throw this one out at you before the break, and we can take the break here in a minute or two. So what would your gut feeling be, Keith Rosenblum, that which candidate would the cartels not like to see in office?
I love the question. I'm not sure. I might have to think about it through the entire break, but the answer is that there will be different alliances, different accommodations, different pacts that are made with different candidates, because Mexico is one huge country and a president can only control so much. And so it's up to governors, up to lots of people along the way to make the deals that allow for the border routes to be handed off to this cartel or that cartel. It's very organized. And what Mexico wants, and probably what the U.S. would like to see as well, is simply a de facto acknowledgement that this is the way it is and just leave it that way and quit having conflicts between the cartels. That's what spooks people, is that you can't drive. I've driven, you know, I pause when I'm driving now to Caborca or to Puerto Libertad or to Puerto Peñasco because there's curfews. They're not called curfews, but they are curfews. Like you are not to be on the road after 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock on those highways. When my family will go to Cibuta, where my wife is from, we'll get calls sometimes from her family saying, you know, now's not the right time to come down. There's activity in the area. Activity means that there's battles that are taking place between these rival groups. So it's ugly.
Wow.
And that's
yeah.
the way, I mean, this is what happens when you have a government that is that's essentially impotent for
yeah.
when people outarm you and outclass you.
All right. Keith, I've got another couple of quick questions for you, but we are going to take the break, and we'll be right back with Keith Rosenblum.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At 2 Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico makes a great getaway any time of year, especially this time of year, 75 degrees at midday over there. Beautiful, about a mile high elevation. It's a great time of year to go over there, only about a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. A lot of outdoor activities, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Silver City in Grant County, good starting place before you make the drive over there. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org, to visit Silver City. We send a lot of our listeners over there, and everybody has a great experience over in the southwest corner of the Land of Enchantment. Let's continue now our conversation with Keith Rosenblum, our border reporter, doing our monthly border report, which is a little late this month, but we've been talking about the upcoming presidential elections in Mexico. Is Mexico facing a danger, in your opinion, of devolving into what happened in Colombia in the 1980s, 1990s, with the narcos pretty much running the show, Keith?
I wish I knew more about the Colombia model to answer that better. I think that Colombia said, we're going to recognize that it was so entrenched that even though you don't want to reward organized crime by saying, okay, we're going to go ahead and negotiate, I don't think Mexico has any choice. So the Colombia model, I'm going to learn more about. The next time we have a conversation, Bill, I'll be better prepped to tell you. But right now, the tentacles of organized crime extend to so many parts of society. You could go, and again, this is not you. This is no one who's going to be going on vacation to Peñasco or to Alamos or to, if you're a tourist, you got to buy. The last thing that anybody in organized crime or any crime wants is for a spotlight to be focused on something for their culpability, because you invite attention. Now a government has to act. And so I think part of what I'm talking about right now have to come back and touch on this. The entire apparatus of police force has been changed in the last 6 years, and the country now has a national police force called Guardia Nacional, which is National Guard. And it would be as if in the U.S. we got rid of all local police and all, you know, highway patrol and all, everybody had a single police force. And what makes it, it's already, to me, it's already a poor idea to begin with. But what makes it even a worse idea is that it has been even in violation for quite a period of time. It's been in violation of Mexico's own constitution. it's been run by the military, by what they call Sedena, the Secretary of Defense. That's a no-no. And so what you have, though, is López Obrador's ability to simply say, too bad, I'm going to do it anyway. And he's run roughshod over the Congress and said, well, I'm going to do it. So what you have right now are you have basically thousands, and I think the number is now 200,000 members of the Guardia Nacional throughout the country. And they pretty much, they don't have any of the experience of traditional police departments, really of state police. They don't have the labs. So pretty much any crime today in Mexico goes impune. Nothing happens. And that's just the way the country is right now. One of however many murders or burglaries or whatever is solved. There are municipal police forces still, but that's it. And those police forces are generally way underarmed and under-equipped. But their national police force, which is Guardia Nacional, is now the one that's supposedly supplanting the military when it comes to drug enforcement issues in the country. To me, it's just like one big mess. And so, you don't want to have to go back to cartels or anyone say, well, yeah, can we put our cards on the table here? I don't think Mexico has any choice, though, because the amount. And by the way, this is one of those issues where if we really want to assign blame, which Americans love to do, then we might look at our inability to control our arms exports because we have effectively armed every cartel in Mexico. Everybody.
Yeah.
And there's a trial going on right now in Tucson that deals nominally with whether gun shops should be allowed to sell things to people, and these end up with the cartels. But when we're thinking about, oh, those horrible Mexicans doing all this or that and they're all armed, we might look at ourselves and our inability or our reluctance or, you know, whatever, to actually look at where all of these military-grade weapons are going to once they come off the assembly lines in Connecticut and in terms of where the manufacturers are, but on the East Coast, I think, mostly. Anyway, so that's one of the issues. I mean, you have to feel sorry for a country where they're necessarily outnumbered, although they are as well, but certainly out-armed, which is the way things are today. And it's because we provide those weapons.
Yeah, and before I forget, and it was an obvious question, and I want to address it going back to the two women who are the front runners. I don't know, has Mexico ever had a woman president?
Mexico has never had.
There you go. So this would be a first.
Will be.
Yeah.
Yes, it will. And it will be because this is Mexico has roared back from all of the, the male-dominated society. Mexico now has, they have rules as to equal representation in virtually every governmental office and in the Congress. You have to run a male and a female. To me, they've gone overboard. They've actually gone, and they have rules now that require indigenous peoples have a spot in Congress, a certain number that corresponds to their part of the population of the country. So it's really interesting. They've come to me. I believe they have actual gay and lesbian representation as well, mandated by the new laws. So talk about a country that's gone from being macho, where everything was male dominant, in a period of 30 years or 40 years. That's remarkable to watch.
Yeah. All right. Just about out of time, and we'll pick up on this on the election as we for your visit. The first Monday of the month, that will be in May. So, Keith, very much good conversation. As always, thank you very much.
Got it, Bill. Thank you.
All right. Keith Rosenblum knows so much about what is going on south of the border. All right. That's going to do it on behalf of Mr. Rosenblum and Tom Fairbanks engineering and producing our program. I'm Bill Buckmaster, and I do want to promote tomorrow's program. Our Friday Focus interview will be with the police chief, Chad Kazmar, the police chief of Tucson, Arizona. There'll be a ton of things in my stack of stuff to talk with the chief about. And I know that Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star, who will be my co-host, has a bunch of questions too. So no shortage of topics for the chief tomorrow. Until then, hope everybody is well. Has a great day.